Secretary Pompeo and I reaffirmed that the ROK-US alliance, which celebrates its 65th anniversary this year, is robust as ever.
South Korea, Japan, and the U.S. meet to calm jittery Asian nerves. It's Friday, June 15th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Join us on VOA Asia Facebook. Ahead this half hour, China and the U.S. tussle over Taiwan, and tech toys on display at the CES Asia. That and more, all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo Thursday pushed back against a North Korean state media report that U.S. President Donald Trump agreed during this week's Singapore summit with Kim Jong-un to gradually lift sanctions against Pyongyang, saying that Trump had been very clear about the sequence of steps in the process. VOA's Jeff Custer has more.
Speaking at a news conference in Seoul alongside South Korean Foreign Minister Kang Kyung-hwa and Japanese Foreign Minister Taro Kono, the U.S. Secretary of State said the Trump administration would not repeat the mistakes made by past presidents that rewarded Pyongyang for denuclearization promises.
We're going to get complete denuclearization, and only then will there be relief from the sanctions.
The official Korean Central News Agency, KCNA, had earlier said President Trump offered to lift sanctions against North Korea as relations improve, indicating a phased-in approach where concessions would be provided at various stages of the denuclearization process.
What happened in Singapore created an enormous opportunity. And when we refer to the mistakes of the past, they were providing economic and financial relief before the complete denuclearization had taken place. That is not going to happen. President Trump made that clear.
Secretary Pompeo also insisted that Pyongyang was committed to giving up its nuclear arsenal.
Kim Jong-un's public commitment to completely denuclearize is an important step towards bringing lasting peace and stability to Northeast Asia and indeed to the entire world. As the President said, this will be a process and not an easy one. Staying closely aligned with our allies, the Republic of Korea and Japan, will be critical to the success of that outcome.
After the summit, President Trump surprised allies in the region by calling the joint military exercises with South Korea provocative, and saying they will no longer be held as long as North Korea continues to make progress toward denuclearization. South Korean Foreign Minister Kang said the issue of these military drills was not discussed in detail at the U.S.-South Korea-Japan trilateral meeting, but she reaffirmed that the U.S.-South Korean military alliance remains strong, and they will continue to closely consult on all joint security decisions.
Secretary Pompeo and I reaffirmed that the ROK-U.S. alliance, which celebrates its 65th anniversary this year, is robust as ever, that the United States forces in Korea has played and will continue to play a crucial role for deterrence and peace and stability on the Korean Peninsula.
U.S. officials said it was unclear what type of training involving U.S. and South Korean troops might now be stopped due to Trump's order to end the war games. But the massive annual exercises that bring in nuclear-capable ships and warplanes from Guam and other U.S. bases in the region will likely end. Japanese Foreign Minister Kono was more cautious in his praise and signaled Japan's future involvement in regional dialogue.
Japan will continue to play an important role in realizing peace and stability in Northeast Asia, in close coordination with the United States and ROK.
Kono welcomed the diplomatic progress made at the summit, but sought clarification at the trilateral meeting that North Korea's short-range ballistic missile arsenal that could target the mainland of Japan and its chemical weapons capability would also be eliminated as part of the denuclearization deal.
Japan maintains its stance where we aim to resolve the nuclear, missile, and abductee issues comprehensively, normalize diplomatic ties with North Korea, and then we'll offer economic assistance for North Korea.
Kono also sought reassurance that the U.S. military presence in Japan would not be reduced after Trump indicated he would like to withdraw all or some of the over 28,000 troops in South Korea at some point, as both a cost-saving measure and to reduce a perceived overextended U.S. military presence overseas. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo then flew to Beijing, where he briefed Chinese State Counselor Wang Yi, heard here through an interpreter.
This is a successful and historic meeting, and the significance lies in that it has reincorporated the peninsula issue back to the track of peaceful solution via dialogues. This is a good beginning, and we are great appreciative of the courage and vision demonstrated by the leaders of U.S. and the DPRK. This is a good beginning, but of course, it is impossible to solve this issue overnight.
Secretary of State Pompeo summarized his trip to South Korea and China this way.
This is my third country that I've had the chance to speak with today. Each has reinforced three important things that happened in Singapore. First, the commitment to a fundamentally changed relationship. Japan, the Republic of Korea, and now China have all acknowledged that we have turned the corner, that we have begun a process away from the threat of war and towards peace on the peninsula. Each of those three countries, too, has acknowledged the importance of the work that President Trump has undertaken and the commitments that Chairman Kim has made towards that very end to achieve that denuclearization. And each of those three countries has also acknowledged that it is important that the sanctions regime that is in place today remain in place until such time as that denuclearization is in fact complete.
Jeff Custer, VOA News.
These are among the top Asia stories currently trending on voanews.com. U.S. lawmakers dismiss President Trump's claim that North Korea is no longer a nuclear threat. The United States imposes sanctions on the commander of Cambodian Prime Minister Hun Sen's personal bodyguard. Consumer electronics show Asia opens in Shanghai, and millions of Asia's Muslims on the move for the end of Ramadan. More on these and other stories at voanews.com/Asia. VOA Asia continues. Some North Korean defectors say they're feeling betrayed by President Donald Trump for praising North Korean leader Kim Jong-un during their meeting in Singapore, rather than confronting him about widespread human rights violations committed by his repressive government. VOA's Brian Padden in Seoul reports.
At the U.S.-North Korea summit, President Trump was effusive in his praise of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, calling him a terrific person and a great leader, and because, telling VOA's Greta Van Susteren that he cares greatly about the welfare of the people.
He loves his people, not that I'm surprised by that, but he loves his people, and I think that we have the start of an amazing deal.
Trump's embrace of Kim in pursuit of denuclearization has left North Korean defectors and human rights advocates like Jung Kwon Il feeling abandoned. Jung was among a group of defectors that met with the president in the White House after his State of the Union address, where he called the Kim government a depraved and cruel dictatorship. Jung said Trump led the group to believe that he would confront the leadership in Pyongyang about the widespread abuses in the country. Now he feels let down.
I was really disappointed. We trusted this big country, the United States, and we've been working on North Korean human rights issues together until now. But now I'm not sure if we can work together in the future.
In North Korea, poverty is widespread, travel within the country restricted, outside information prohibited, and any dissent is brutally suppressed. Kim Young-hwa, a defector who is part of a group that uses the ocean current to send rice to the impoverished North, had also come to believe that Trump was committed to end Kim's repressive rule. But at the summit, he said, Trump strengthened Kim's hold on power.
Trump, the leader of the whole world, acknowledging that Kim Jong-un is a smart and talented guy, is like stabbing the heart of the North Korean resident.
These defectors turned to Trump in part because South Korea had already embraced an engagement strategy with North Korea. They say officials in Seoul are pressuring them to stop sending banned information into the North that could hamper cooperation efforts underway. While Trump said he did talk about human rights with Kim, Human Rights Watch criticized the president for leaving it out of the final declaration and saying that the North Korean people were the big losers from the Singapore summit. Brian Padden, VOA News, Seoul.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
Happening now in Asia, millions of Asia's Muslims are on the move as they head for their hometowns to celebrate the Eid al-Fitr holiday, marking the end of Ramadan with family. Some 70% of Indonesians, about 8 million people, travel to other cities and villages across that vast nation. Stay to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. China said it has lodged a stern representation with the United States over the refurbished dedication ceremony Tuesday held at the American Institute of Taiwan, the United States de facto embassy in Taipei. The $250 million renovation is seen as underscoring Washington's commitment to the self-ruled island that Beijing regards as a renegade province. Marie Royce, the Assistant Secretary of State for Educational and Cultural Affairs, was on hand for the ceremony, calling it a symbol of the strength and vibrancy of the U.S.-Taiwan partnership in the 21st century, a view shared by Taiwan President Tsai Ing-wen.
As we dedicate this building, we are also rededicate ourselves to our common sense of purpose. As free and open democracies, we have an obligation to work with one another to defend our value and protect our joint interests. As long as we stand together, nothing can come between us.
The ceremony took place after President Trump signed into law the Taiwan Travel Act in March, encouraging high-level visits, and China stepped up military drills around the island. U.S. State Department spokeswoman Heather Nauert said the new compound marks a milestone that reflects the importance of the U.S.-Taiwan partnership and represents progress in bilateral ties made over the past years.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
This news alert from VOA Asia, the Blackstone Group says it will accelerate its Asia-Pacific investments after raising a combined $9.4 billion from two funds dedicated to the region. The New York-based asset manager will have $15 billion to deploy to real estate, private equity, and other opportunities in Asia once money from its global funds is included. Visit VOA Asia Facebook for each day's top stories. And VOA Asia continues. The separatist campaign in Indian-administered Kashmir broke out into major violence in 1989. It's estimated that more than 60,000 people have died so far during the turmoil in the disputed Himalayan region. About 10,000 people have fallen victim of forced disappearances. That's pushed their families and other dependents into poverty. For the region's youth, earning a living has been a major challenge. Educated young women are specifically facing challenges in searching for jobs. However, one group of young entrepreneurs are taking matters into their own hands. Yusuf Jamil has more in this report, narrated by Bejan Hamdad.
The resistance movement in Indian-administered Kashmir resurfaced on a major scale in the summer of 2016. Over the past few years, separatists have called for frequent curfews and shutdowns, disrupting the routine lives of locals in the area. But one young woman, Beenish, wanted to improve her life.
There are so many things that girls can do. Everyone has their own skills. When you have yearning to do something, no one can stop you.
Earning a living is a major challenge for the educated youth here. Indian-administered Kashmir has India's highest unemployment rate at more than 12%, according to a recent survey by the Center for Monitoring Indian Economy and the Bombay Stock Exchange.
We realize that getting jobs in Kashmir has become difficult. You have to go through a lot of struggle to get a job. So we decided to stand up on our own feet. We said, let us explore our aptitude and do something on our own.
Beenish and others working with her started producing novelty items that are not available elsewhere. They used social media to boost their business. The group boosted their sales once they developed a presence on social media with their Craft World Kashmir pages on Instagram and Facebook. Since then, the group sales are about $1,000 a month.
I was working as a teacher at a private school to which my parents had no objection, when we then thought to do something different. In fact, it was our parents who encouraged us when they saw our hard work.
Labor Department officials in Indian-administered Kashmir said there are as many as 87,000 registered unemployed youth in the Kashmir Valley alone. The government is working on a number of programs aimed at helping the young entrepreneurs, officials say.
There are plenty of efforts by the government to create new ways to create jobs, so there are multiple things going on. But there is an impact of peace process. Until there is stability, the unemployment won't be able to be adjusted.
For Yusuf Jamil in Srinagar, Kashmir, this is Bejan Hamdard, VOA News.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. You can listen to Encounter following VOA News, either on the radio or online at voanews.com/encounter. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to encounter@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This news alert from VOA Asia. The UN Human Rights Chief is calling for an international inquiry into alleged human rights abuses in Kashmir. This comes in conjunction with the first report issued on Kashmir, which highlights chronic impunity for violations committed by security forces, both by both Indian and Pakistanis. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. Judging by the size of the crowd and the number of exhibitors at the 4th Annual Consumer Electronics Show Asia, which opened Wednesday in Shanghai, China is well on its way toward catching up with the United States in consumer technology. A mirror image of the older and bigger sister show in Las Vegas, CES Asia 2018 presents the latest hardware and software for everyone. VOA's George Pudich has more.
Whether you're looking for a new, exciting virtual reality game, a remote-controlled underwater camera, or a futuristic scooter, Consumer Electronics Show Asia 2018 is the place to be. Organizers from the U.S.-based Consumer Technology Association say this year, small private companies with fresh ideas are springing up everywhere in Asia.
We have a huge startup area, over 100 different startups. That's up 33% over last year. And it's not only from China, but it's from many other countries as well, with different country pavilions at this show.
Each one of them has arrived with a gadget that may make someone's life easier, from a motorized suitcase that closely follows its owner to dancing robots. But experts say Asian consumers will need some convincing to spend their money.
If they're just coming out with novelty, you know, items where just attract some consumers for a short period of time, I think they have to rethink about what they should do in the long term.
Another area showing strong development is artificial intelligence, and most of it is employed in controlling self-driving cars.
Up 25% over last year as we have major car companies coming. We're seeing at least two car companies introducing new cars here.
Service robots do not attract much attention anymore, as they can already be seen at airports, hotels, and museums. Smartphones, however, are something everybody needs. Robotic sharks, maybe not so much. CES Asia will be open through Friday. George Putic, VOA News.
Hi, this is Victor Beatty, Managing Editor of VOA News. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
You're listening to VOA Asia. Michael Benanov has traveled around much of the world, chronicling in words and pictures nomadic communities from Mali to Jordan to Mongolia. But when he heard about the Van Gujar tribe of northern India, he knew he wanted to do more than just document their existence. He wanted to join them on a migration to better understand their nomadic way of life and culture. He spoke with VOA's Julie Tabo from his home in Dixon, New Mexico.
The first thing photographer Michael Benanov noticed when he embedded himself with the Van Gujar tribe family was how welcoming they were towards him.
They really invited me and welcomed me into their world and really was taken into the family with an incredible amount of warmth and trust. You know, my work has taken me many places in the world, meeting many different kinds of people, and there was something about this family that really touched me in a way that was quite unique.
Benanov says that while the Van Gujars are Muslim, he found them to be among the more liberal communities within India, especially the women.
Even though I was a man coming in from the outside, there were no barriers whatsoever to me talking to, hanging out with, spending time with the women in the family. It was a very well-integrated situation, gender-wise.
Benanov also noticed how devoted tribe members were not only to each other, but to the herd of water buffaloes around which their lives revolved. Understanding that profound connection to their animals, he says, is fundamental to understanding the Van Gujars.
Every Van Gujar buffalo has a name. Every buffalo, they say, has a unique personality. If a buffalo was to get sick, the family would be really racked with concern. And if a buffalo dies, they'll bury it and mourn for it, almost as if it was human.
During his 44 days with the family, Benanov also learned about the tribe's migration patterns.
The Van Gujars practice a form of seasonal migration. They live all year in the wilderness, and in the fall and the winter, they live in an area called the Shivalik Hills, which is a chain of low but very rugged hills in North India that is covered by a thick, jungly kind of forest, which provides plenty of food for the buffaloes during that time of the year.
By April, it starts to get so hot there that there's nothing left for the buffaloes to eat or drink, he says, which means that in order for them to survive, they have to trek to a cooler climate, up into the Himalayas. But the tribe's ancestral homelands are becoming less accessible to them as they're increasingly incorporated into national parks and wildlife sanctuaries.
Some of them have already been forcibly evicted from the forests where they and their ancestors have lived for over 1,000 years. And others are today facing that same kind of pressure.
And that is having a major impact on the Van Gujar tribe members and other nomadic communities around the world.
Whether it's Navajo people or whether it's the nomadic Van Gujars or whether it's the Alevi Kurds in Turkey, there's a really profound kind of a relationship with the natural world. Maybe some of that comes from the fact that they're living really in intimate contact with the natural world, but also their perspective on it as something that is essentially sacred.
Benanov has chronicled his experience with the Van Gujars in his latest book, Himalaya Bound, which he hopes will expand the world of his readers. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
And you've been listening to VOA Asia. You can get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can also find us at voanews.com. Let us know what you think of our program. Our email address, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks so much for being with us. Have a great weekend. We'll see you again next week.